Says it's really good to be here this morning, and privileged, you know, to be able to teach God's word to y'all and to share what God has put on my heart. And it's always exciting. Every time God puts something on my heart, sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes I'll sit back and be praying and think, Lord, what in the world? You know, just, I'm not getting anything. You know, you wait and wait, and it seems like once I've always described it this way, but it seems like once He puts on my heart what to teach, it feels like He opens up like a faucet, and I'm like struggling to keep up with everything that's coming into mind. And I just really enjoy it, and I can't wait to share it, you know. So the title I put is just kind of a I don't want to say a vague title, a little vague maybe, Slaying Giants, right? And you can call this, you can look at this any way you want, you know, slaying what kind of giants? We're going to go out there and kill some giants, and, or, you know, what kind of giants are we talking about? Right? And there's a couple of different ways I kind of will look at it this morning, and I kind of will look at it from Caleb's point of view. If you remember Caleb, he was one of the children of Israel that came out of Egypt with Moses and Joshua and all them. His story kind of starts back in the book of Numbers when Moses gets some spies together. He said, we need some spies. We need to go into the land and see what the land is all about. You know, the land of Canaan, the promised land. And said, pick out some spies. 12 spies, they get ready to go, one from each of the tribes of the children of Israel. They get ready to go into the promised land. They all go, and man, they're seeing some great things. They're saying they're bringing back all these grapes, and they're saying it's a land flowing with milk and honey, and just, you know, a very prosperous land. You know what? You know, good place to be, basically. But another thing, what is they see there is giants. They see giants there, and what do they say? I think they kind of exaggerated a little bit. Maybe not. I wasn't there, but the one thing that they said was, you know, there's giants in the land. 10 of the spies, they come back full of fear, and they say, man, there's giants there. They would crush us like grasshoppers. Right? If we know grasshoppers, you know, usually maybe 3 to 4 inches big, you know, some of the bigger ones, maybe a little bit bigger than that. But what the fearful spies were saying was that, you know, these giants are so big that they can literally step on us, you know, and crush us like a grasshopper. And again, I don't know how true that is. I don't know. But we do know how fear can distort things. You know, fear can make things seem a lot worse than what they are, right? Some of y'all that have really dealt with big worry and things like that, sometimes it when you're in that worry or when you're in that fear, man, it seems humongous. It seems like, how am we going to deal with this? But then once you've kind of gone through it and you've dealt with the trial or whatever that could be, you look back in life, you know, 5 or 6 years later, and you look back on that, what you thought was a giant, if you will, at that time, that was going to kill you or crush you. You look back and you think, well, that wasn't that bad. You know, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, and sometimes I look at the children of Israel there in the book of Numbers when they were complaining about the giants of the land being so big, you know, makes me wonder if maybe they were just exaggerating a little. I'm not saying there weren't giants. You know, we do know there were giants, but man, if they were literally, the relationship in size was that the children of Israel were grasshoppers and the giants were really that big, I mean, that means the giants would have been probably close to 150 feet tall, you know? So I don't think they were that big, right? So, but, you know, again, that fear distorted things. But anyway, of all the spies that went into the promised land, the 12 that went in, 10 of them came back fearful, 2 of them came back confident that the Lord was going to be with them. And who were they? They were Joshua and Caleb, right? And in that exchange of words, Caleb was the one that was more outspoken than Joshua, surprisingly. You know, he was the one telling the children of Israel, hey, there's no reason to be scared. You know, it's time to go. We got to go in there. Yeah, there's giants, but who cares? God, if God's with us, then everything's going to be okay. And that's kind of how the story starts out there with Caleb. You know, and he was one of the leaders of the tribes of Israel at the time, and he was very brave, if you will. He's also about 40 years old at that time when he went in to spy out the land in the land of Canaan. All right, so Caleb, you know, giant killer, if you will. Growing up, there's always been guys that I've always kind of looked up to. You know, hopefully for the young people here that they can say the same thing. There's always people you kind of look up to. There's things that you see about them you want to do. You want to be like it, right? I remember growing up, I used to try to walk like my dad. Right? I think a lot of young kids could do that. You know, we'd be going outside, and we used to have a wood stove in the house, and we'd go cut up the wood for it. And while we were cutting up the wood, my dad would pile up my arms with these little, you know, kindling, basically, and just big, you know, smaller pieces, and he'd pick up the big stuff, and then we'd walk back through the snow back to the house, you know, to put it down by the wood stove. Well, I remember, you know, as he's walking through the snow, there I am, trying to jump in his footsteps, if you will. You know, I'm probably looking silly at the same time, but I was trying, you know, trying to walk like my dad. You know, as I got a little bit older, you start seeing other people that you want to try to copy or try to emulate. You know, and I loved basketball growing up. I think I talked about this a little last week. I wanted to be like Michael Jordan for a while. You know, I tried to do everything Michael Jordan was doing. I tried to shoot like him. They even had a song about Michael Jordan, wanting to be like Mike, you know. And you know, getting a little bit older, I remember when I joined the military, there's another guy I wanted to be like, and tried to walk like him, tried to act like him, and things like that. But there was always seemed like somebody, even now, there's people I look up in my life that I just wanted to be like them. You know, there's things that I see about him that I just really try to copy, and because I would just want to be that way, right? So when we think about all these things, about the kind of people we want to be like, you know, you look at the kind of people that young people should try to look up to is not the Michael Jordans. And I'm not saying if you want to play basketball, I guess try to be like that. But when it comes to life, when it comes to the reality of life, do you want to be like somebody that plays a game, right? Or do you want to be like somebody that's actually lived through life and they've slain giants of their own, if you want to look at it that way? And that's kind of the point I want to make this morning, slaying giants. You know, what kind of giants have come into your life? You know, we've all dealt with giants. You might not have looked at them as giants, right? But we've all dealt with giants in one way or another. You know, struggling to make ends meet can be a giant in your life. You know, living paycheck to paycheck, sometimes that's rough. I used to do that, but it was kind of more of my own doing, not just because I spent so much money when I was single, right? My one thing my wife taught me when we got married is, hey, you got to be smart with your money. It took a little bit of while and a lot of patience for myself. Some husbands might have dealt with that, but, you know, thankfully, God brought me to her side, and I'm a little bit smarter with money than I used to be, you know? But that was a giant in my life, trying to adjust to that, you know, just not spending money like crazy, you know, and being responsible. And that could be a giant in some of y'all's life. Another giant could be raising kids. That's a giant for me right now. Good night, right? And I haven't even hit the teenage years yet. And that's one that everybody's always warning me about. Wait till you get to the teenage years. You know, right now they're good. And then, I remember how I was as a teenager. So I'm kind of scared, you know, what's coming up. But, you know, that's going to be a giant in my life, you know. Another one could be working through problems in marriage. You know, I think some of the biggest things that I've had to deal with in my life have been because of marriage. Not in a bad way, right? It's made me a better person. But I tell you what, when you love somebody as much as you do your wife or your husband, when problems arise, it seems a lot bigger, right? Brother Phil could come up and cuss me out this morning and really try to hurt my feelings, and I'd probably be, all right, brother, that's all right, you know, that's good, you know, and he'd kind of go off with it. But, you know, and he'd be sincere and everything, he just really showed hatred towards me. Okay, I could deal with it. But if the same thing happened, my wife came up and said the same thing to me, and I knew she really meant it, I don't know what I would do, to be honest with you. You know, why? Because we're just closer. You know, and the closer you are with somebody, the more that they can hurt you with even just the goofy little thing, right? I was talking about, this is silly. I'm going to tell you this is silly because I think it's silly. We was talking about cars the other day. My wife's not big into cars. I love cars, right? And I was talking about these two cars the other day, and I was trying to point out, we were on the way back from getting family pictures yesterday. And I was like, hey, there's these two cars right over there. You got to see them, right? Because, you know, they just looked, some of the guys know what I'm talking about. One car just looks different, and it's hard to explain unless you see it, right? So I'm trying to point it out to her, but at the same time, she was texting with the photographer we were just with, and she missed it. Man, that kind of hurt my feelings. All right, I was like, man, you missed it. I'm not turning around. That's Brother Phil back there talking. Right? She missed it. I was like, oh, come on. I'm not turning around. She's like, well, why don't you turn around and show me again? You know me. No, I ain't doing that. Just get home. Right? Drive off and speed away from the little parking lot there. But, you know, that is very silly. But at the same time, when you grow close with somebody, guess what? And you love them, and little things can hurt you. And we have to be sensitive to that. But that can be a giant in somebody's life. You know, dealing with things in marriage. And it's fun. Let me tell you, it's fun. But there are little things the devil can take and just really blow out of proportion. Then you can fill in the blank. You know, giants in your life. You know, your car's broke down. What in the world are you going to do? Right? I know somebody that they've gone through 3 cars in the past 2 years because they keep breaking down. And, you know, that's a giant in their life. They don't know what they're going to do. They got the 2 broken down cars at their house they can't afford to fix. You know, and they're borrowing their in-laws' car. You know, and for them, that's a giant in their life. So who do you go to solve these problems, right? Where do you go to solve them? Do you go to Michael Jordan? No, nope, hopefully not. He's not going to help you. He might have a lot of money. He might have had a lot of success playing a game of basketball, but, man, that guy's got a messed up life. If you ever read about some of the things that guy does. And you know, Tiger Woods, you know, and all these other people. When I think about the guy that I used to try to be like in the military, I look at his life. Man, that guy's an alcoholic and just all kinds of messed up. Been married twice. Why in the world do I want to be like him? You know, what in the world am I thinking? Right? But again, to those of us I know, especially at my age, and those maybe that are younger that kind of do with the same thing, when you look up the people in your life, forget about those people, the celebrities and all that craziness that goes on. I was looking at, I did a study on divorce for sociology class a couple years ago, and we was doing one on divorce, and so guess what I did? I said, I decided to look up the divorce rates in California around like Beverly Hills and Hollywood and all those places. The divorce rate there was like, it was ridiculous, like 8 times higher than the rest of the country. You know, just I'm like, who wants to even be like that, you know? Who wants to be like the people they portray to have succeeded in life? They can't even hold their marriages together, you know? And I believe, according to the book of Ephesians, that marriage is the highest calling of any man. Any man that's married, that's your highest calling you could ever have, right? Fatherhood second, right? Of course, loving God's first, but if you love God, you're going to keep his commandments, right? So you got to do what he says. So, but the highest calling of man, hey, it's your marriage, right? If you're failing at everything else in life, but your marriage is being held together, patched up, well, don't patch stuff on the back, right? Don't show much pride. But at the same time, but, you know, that's what God wants to see, right? You want to think about slaying giants, okay? So let's say you're dealing with marriage. Marriage, you're struggling in marriage. Who do you go talk to? All right, we just decided we shouldn't go talk to Michael Jordan or Clint Eastwood or whoever, right? Don't go talk to those people, right? Go look for somebody in your church and look and see who's done it right. Look who's been there before. Look who's slain that giant, if that makes sense, if you want to look at marriage as a giant. Look at those people that have been married 20, 30, 40 years. What do they do? How do they keep it together, right? Don't go to the self-help books because, yeah, you can read, but you can't ask questions, right? There's nobody there going to be there to guide you, if you will, if you go read that book. But man, I'll tell you what, there's people that are more than willing, because I've been it, I've tried it. You know, if I've had a problem with marriage or with whatever it could be, I don't know, cars, I've actually talked to guys about how do you deal with this, you know, balancing cars and marriage. I've talked to people about that before. But, you know, there's people out there that will answer your question. You know, ask you how you're doing. You know, people here, you got problems in a certain thing, don't look to the whatever else. You know, there's people right here in church, right? Let's look at Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 31. Proverbs 16:31. Proverbs is a book written for young men and women. I mean, for both, but it's full of knowledge, right? For those that are young, especially. Proverbs 16:31 says, "The silver-haired is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." You know, you got a person that can rule his own spirit, that does not let his emotions get the better of him. And the Bible says, hey, you're better than Napoleon. You know, the guy that was out there trying to conquer, do all the General Napoleon, did all those awesome military things, right? Napoleon, you think about any general out there, Robert E. Lee, any of the great military leaders. You think about the Spartans, you know, from Greece and all these things. Man, how awesome, man. I think it would have been fun to see the Spartans and how they did things, you know, and their tactics and everything like that and their training methods. You know, I think that would be fun to see. But what does the Bible here say? It says, hey, guess who's better than that person, right? Somebody that has rule over their own spirit. You know, James even talks about the person that can, if you can rule your tongue, you know, then you're a perfect person. Basically means nobody can do that except Christ, right? But it says, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules the spirit better than he that takes the city, right? And then backing up to verse 31, the silver hair is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness. So who are we supposed to be going to seek advice for slain giants? If I could tell you, who you go seek after? Go look at the silver-haired. And that's, I know sometimes we look at that as a derogatory term in our society. I don't think so, right? My wife's asking me, are you ever going to dye your hair? Nope. Like, if I get the silver hair, I'm going to, hopefully, in the way of righteousness, I'm going to look at it just like this. I'm going to look at it as a crown of glory, right? Go and seek the advice of others. Those that have been there before. Those that know how to slay, to get through these things, if you will. That's the important thing, right? Reading your Bible is important, right? Of course, we understand that. Read your Bible. Yes, you need advice to read your Bible. But, you know, there are times when I believe God purposefully puts a little bit of ignorance in your head. Ignorance is something that you can't really help, if that makes sense, right? You just can't understand something. And I believe sometimes God will let you be ignorant about something. Why? So you go ask somebody else, right, to try to create that bond. I remember one thing that when I was a young kid, I used to go door knocking a lot with my dad, and because he made me, but, you know, I'd be there, you know, 6, 7 years old, walking around with him and some other brother from church, but they'd be talking about things. I remember sitting there listening to their conversations. You know, they'd talk about all kinds of stuff. And I remember sitting there listening, like, man, they talk about some interesting things here. Asking questions of each other, you know, about the Bible and just that time of fellowship, you know. And I thought, that's kind of neat, you know. That needs to be more important in our life today. Ask questions one with another. Don't you know, keep each other at arm's length. Hopefully we don't do that, right? But, you know, embrace one another. Eating together. I love eating together. You know why? Because I know for women, I don't know how it is for women when it comes to cooking together. I don't know. I just know when my wife gets together to cook with some ladies, it's just the men have to leave the kitchen because I won't take this joke too far, so I'll stop it right there. But you can't talk. Guys, you can't talk in there, just so you know. But, you know, all the guys usually go out to the living room, they do something else, you know, outside or something, right? Somehow the women, they can get in there and they can have a good time. They can bond cooking and all that stuff. Not everybody, but in general. Guys, usually we have to be out doing stuff together. That's usually why you see guys working together, right? Guys, it's hard for us to sit there in two chairs facing one another and sit and talk, or over coffee. I've had a hard time with that. I had a pastor in South Carolina who said, hey, let's go out for coffee. I'm like, all right, we'll go out for coffee. That's fine with me. But I used to have a hard time sitting there at a table with him and just all right, what are we going to talk about, right? But if it was just me and him out there cleaning the church building or something like that, guess what? Right, we'd talk about all kinds of stuff, right? I don't know what it is about guys. You do stuff together. Somehow you just, that's how you get to know each other. Go out and bale hay together. Remember some of the guys I used to bale hay with when I was in high school? Man, some of the best friends I ever had. And all we do is spend 8 hours out there baling hay and getting all out of breath and sweaty. And we didn't really say much, but man, we were good friends, you know? On the wrestling team, man, we just wrestle and beat each other up. Didn't say much, but man, we, you know, good friends, you know, just because you were doing stuff together. I think that's maybe a guy thing. I don't know, right? But, you know, get together with these. And like I said, Bible reading is important. Of course it's important, but also fellowship. You know, get together with one another. Eating together is fun because guys, we're also doing stuff. You know, you're feeding your face, right? And ladies somehow cooking. But, you know, eating together, whether you know it or not, it's a psychological thing. It's kind of an intimate thing. I don't know if y'all know that or not. It just is, right? You get together, let's say you go to McDonald's every Thursday at 3 o'clock, and there happens to be another family that takes their kids there and does the same thing. Guess what ends up happening? You end up talking after a while because the kids are playing together, and it's all over food. It started with food. You know, so eating together is important. You know, just let's eat together. Right? Plus, we enjoy it. So, especially, I don't know, I like eating together. But here we're looking at Caleb. You know, we've done talked about, you know, what he did in Numbers. You know, he was a leader of the one of the tribes of Israel. You know, and that's kind of how he started off. You know, he wasn't fearful. You know, he talks about in Numbers and also in Joshua how that he can do everything. And I'm paraphrasing the story, but he can do everything because God's right there with him. You know, I can do this because God's with me. I can, you know, he just didn't have fear. David was much the same way. Remember when he went to go slay Goliath, what happened? Man, I can take this giant down. What, I've killed a bear and a lion, and God was with me those times. God can surely be with me when I take down this giant. You know, what a neat spirit to have, you know, to tackle things like that. Giants in your life. You know, I've been here before. I've dealt with losing the job, let's say. I've dealt with my car breaking down and not knowing how to get to work. I've been there before. God's always came through, right? And if he didn't come through in the way I thought he should have came through, he still came through in the best way for me, right? According to Romans 8:28. Right, everything happens for the good. So yeah, let's say that your car broke down. There's an example of there was a sister I knew at a church that she was always praying that God would give her a different job, right? Because she always had to work on Sundays. Could never hardly ever get out of work because she always worked on Sundays. We'd see her probably once every couple months, and you know, she was faithful with her communication, but you know, she always said, "I can't get another job. You know, I'm working here. They always work me on Sundays." And of course, the regular advice is, "Well, go find another job." Well, she was so fearful about letting go of that security, if you will, from that one job, that she wouldn't leave it, right? Guess what ended up happening? You know, after years of us praying with her looking for another job, guess what happened to her? She got sick, right? Couldn't even go to work. Ended up losing the job anyway, you know? And you know, sometimes that's the way. God didn't provide her job offer, if you will, while she was still working. But the way God answered that prayer was what? Well, now you're sick. Now you can't actually go to work, you know. That's just sometimes God answers our prayers in different ways than we want. But you know, overall, it's for our best. You know, God knows what our need. He knows how to answer our needs better than we know how to answer our own needs. You know, which is I think is great because I think I'm pretty smart sometimes, right? And I find out pretty quickly that I'm not, right? And thank the Lord for that because He knows what's best for me. All right, Caleb. He lived all over the place. He was born in Egypt. You know, we talked about he was 40 years old when he went to spy out the land. Let's go ahead and turn over to Joshua 14. All right, we're going to continue on with our little Caleb story, you know, about slaying giants. And I'll kind of sum all this up as we get here towards the end. Joshua 14. We're going to be in verse 6. It says, "Then the children of Judah came to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, 'You know the word which the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought back word to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt.'" And he's talking about the other spies. They won over. Even though I wasn't scared and you weren't scared, he said all the rest of the spies, guess what they did? They convinced everybody else that there were giants in the land. And that was one of the punishments for that. Was, remember, the children of Israel ended up wandering the wilderness for all those years. But here Caleb saying, he said, "Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt. But I wholly followed the Lord, my God. So Moses swore to me on that day, 'Surely the land where your foot has trodden shall be your inheritance and your children's forever, because you have wholly followed the Lord my God.'" Now what's interesting about that is the giant that Caleb was looking at there was what? Peer pressure. Peer pressure is a hard one to deal with. We have all been there with peer pressure. people naysaying you and all this. You know what? This is bad. I like this story, but it's also kind of embarrasses me a bit. But when I was a drill sergeant, I had this buddy of mine, very vulgar guy, and you know, we had to work together, but he's always talking about the crazy parties and all the things that he would do and things like that. Well, one time we were going somewhere, and we were all sitting in the truck together, heading out to one of the ranges, and everybody started talking about just something just awful. I didn't remember what it was. And I was just trying to zone it out. And guess who stood up for me, the Christian, that vulgar guy that I never thought would, you know? He said, "Hey, y'all, don't be talking about that, because Spears here is a Christian." You know, I'm thinking, like, who's the guy standing up for me? You know, because I didn't feel like standing up for myself at that point. You know, it's this guy that I don't even like listening to, you know, and he quieted everybody else up, you know? But, you know, it was a giant in my life. Sometimes dealing with that peer pressure was heavy. You know, man, if y'all have been there, y'all know what I'm talking about. But here, Caleb, two of the 12 spies that went into the land of Canaan were, 10 of the 12 spies were all fearful. But Caleb, guess what? He stood up against all of them, right? So, hey, don't be scared if you read back in Numbers. But you know, here he said that they went out, right? But for his standing up, Moses said, "I'm going to give you an inheritance," right? Verse 10 says, "And now behold, the Lord has kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years." So if Caleb was about 40 years old when he went to spy out the land, and now it's 45 years later, guess what? He's about 85 years old, right? So Caleb's 85 years old. He said these 45 years ever since the Lord spoke this word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now here I am, this day, 85 years old. As yet I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. You know, so what a neat testimony that is, I think, from Caleb. He said, "I'm as strong now at 85 as I was at 40. I don't know if I'd ever be able to say that, but that'd be kind of neat. I don't know. That'd be kind of an interesting thing to think about, especially those men of war, if you talk about, you know, if you look at it that way. Those guys, those people that live that kind of lifestyle, man, their knees are breaking down, backs and everything. But what's Caleb saying? He said, "I'm still as strong as when I was 40. I'm as strong now at 85 as I was at 40 years old," he's saying. So let's continue, finish off here. It says, "And now therefore give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you have heard in that day how the Anakim were there and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me and I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord had said." And Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, as an inheritance. You know, Caleb didn't have to take that. That's one thing I thought was kind of neat. Caleb didn't have to continue on with that inheritance. That he could have said, "Man, there's giants there. I don't want to go there by myself. You know, there's giants over there. What am I going to do? You know, I'll take someplace else. You know, you all have promised me an inheritance. Let me trade this land for something else." You know, and I think if he would have asked that, especially Caleb being 85 years old and serving faithfully for those 45 years with the children of Israel, I think Joshua would have said, "Hey, it's fine. You know, we'll give you something else. Let's find someplace else for you to go," right? But what Caleb said at 85 years old, "You know, you go ahead and give me this land where all the giants are. I'm good with that," right? Now, in saying that, when we look at Christians, fellow Christians, and we think about slaying these giants, you got a problem. Let's go back to our problems, right? You've had all these problems. You don't know who to go to. You're kind of looking for some kind of advice. You've kind of got it in your head that you shouldn't go asking Michael Jordan or the president or any of the other people. Let me go find somebody local. You know, I know there's people in my church. Let me go ask some people there. You know, go look for the silver hair. Go look for the people that have been there before, right? Those that understand those trials, go ask them, "How did you deal with this?" You know, ask them how they slew those giants. You know, and guess what that person will do? Hopefully, if they've gained that silver hair, as the book of Proverbs just said, through righteousness, right, through the path of righteousness, they'll say, "Hey, come here. Let me teach you some things. Let me talk to you a bit," right? And more than just talking to you, guess what else they're going to do? They're going to be praying for you, right? They'll be praying for you. They'll be coaching you through it. They might be calling you up to encourage you at some point. They might even bring other advice in there. You know, what's better than one piece of advice? Two. Now you got two ways to look at a problem, right? Maybe three if you want to bring in more, right? So I mean, you got all these different ways you can look at a problem. Now you can have people praying for you, people encouraging you on the side, and that's better than all of those things I just said are better than any kind of little self-help book you can go pick up. Why? Because if you can only read that book one way, I mean, unless it's the Bible, you can look at it. That author of that book's not going to be cheering you on, right? I'm not saying there's not wisdom to be found in books. I read a lot. I'm not saying there's not. But what I am saying is don't forget about the silver hair, the ones that have been there before. Man, they got the experience. And not just the experience going through one situation, maybe once. They might have slain 100 giants in their lifetime. You don't know it. But as you get to know them, you start to find out all the things that they've done, the way that they've solved different problems. And, you know, hey, that's the way to gain wisdom. You know, one of the big things before books were actually a big thing, like writing, Back in the days, scholars will say, back before Moses wrote the first book, five books of the Bible, that the most common way to pass down history was to I don't know what the proper word is, but they'd pass it down orally. They said one of the things that they would do almost on a nightly basis is people, after the day's work was done, they'd get together with the elders, if you will, of their village or their group, and they would listen to the stories. You know, the stories that would get passed down. What happened when you were young? I remember when I was young, I used to have to walk to school 10 miles in the snow, 10 feet of snow. Y'all have heard that before, right? But, you know, those kinds of stories would get passed down orally, and they would commit that to memory, right? And then they would pass that to their children and so on. You know, and then we got Moses that started writing the books of the Bible and things like that, you know, which is good for us. But at the same time, you know, to be able to listen, if you will, to those that have gone there before. Now let's skip over to chapter 15. And we're going to see what else Caleb was doing. Chapter 15 and verse 13. It says, "Now Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he gave me a share among the children of Judah, according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, namely Kirjath Arba, which is the Hebron. Arba was the father of Anak. It says, Caleb drove out the three sons of Anak from there, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak." How much time do I got? Oh, I got a little bit of time. Interesting story, all right? You hear about these stories sometimes. This is pretty wild, I'll tell you right now. Talking about the children of the Anakim, right? One of the things they said about the giants, if you read in the Bible, is that they had six toes, six fingers, six toes, right? And they had red hair was one of the things. They were huge, right? They're real tall people. And I'll tell you this, you can take this how you want. Take this with a grain of salt, or you can just, but this is interesting. So there was recently declassified information from the military. Right, it's kind of fun. I think it's fun to like have a kid's imagination still. But recently declassified information that's been circulating a little bit on the internet about a patrol that was sent out in Afghanistan, right, in the mountains of Afghanistan. They said they were sent out on a patrol to just survey the area. Right, they didn't know what was going on. These guys in this special operations group said, hey, it's kind of normal. We get sent to places just to go scope out an area. He said that we were sent to this place. So, you know, there we were. We were going. And they said one thing they thought was really interesting is they had certain people in their command, real high-ranking members of their command, that weren't normally part of any kind of their operation, of what they thought was normal day-to-day operations. So they go in there, and they're coming up to the coordinates that they were given. They said it was this cave. They said they were getting to the outside of this cave, and it just looked like a little encampment. They could tell there was a fire there and things like that. But it says as they got closer, they said there's just a smell, real bad smell. Right, everything stank. They didn't know what was going on. It just really smelled. And they're getting a little bit closer. And so all of a sudden, this big bear comes flying out of the cave. They didn't know what in the world to do. So everybody start doing? They all start shooting. Right, the little 223 AR-15 style, if you will, if you want to look at it that way, rifles, shooting at this big old bear. Thing's not going down. They're shooting at it. It's just going crazy. One of the members of the special operations group said one thing that they noticed, this thing is just pure red. They didn't know what in the world the deal was. This is red. Thing was roaring and making all kinds of ruckus, picked up one of their buddies, they said, threw him and all this stuff, and they're still shooting. And they said, this thing's not going down. They're not understanding. So they called up one of the guys in the back that had the big old 50 caliber sniper rifle. They call him for the bear. They called a bear 50 caliber. They call him for the bear. Get up here, you know. So they shot that thing in the face twice and it went down. Thankfully, 50 caliber, good night, right? So they shot that thing in the face twice and went down. And they said, as everything was clearing up, you know, and one of the things that they do when guys have gone through firefights is they'll debrief almost immediately afterwards. Why? Because everything happens so fast that your short-term memory will start purging it out, especially if it's harmful, if you will, to your psyche. You'll start purging it out. So guys that have really trained for a long time, they can maintain that information. But guys that don't, you know, that don't get in a lot of firefights, so they'll try to do quick debriefs so they can get all the information, right? So once this all happens, they're calling up on the radio, telling what's happened and everything like that. And they said what they didn't understand is why all of a sudden there were these cargo helicopters so close. Like, why are these following us around? They're usually out there by themselves. Why do we have these cargo helicopters flying? It's almost like, make a long story short, the command knew that there was something in the cave is what these guys were saying. There's something there. They didn't know what it was. As they were looking at it, they said it resembled a man. They said they noted it had six fingers and six toes and just red hair all over the place. And said it was huge. Needed this big old helicopter to pick this thing up and take it off. But they said once this helicopter hooked everything up, took it away, and they flew off with it, they got back to the base camp to continue with debrief. And they said there was nobody to debrief them, nothing. I thought that was interesting. What do you mean there's no debrief? You know, they were saying. They get back and start asking questions about everything. Hey, what about the mission we just went on? We got to debrief with somebody. Nobody wanted to admit anything they had any knowledge about any of this stuff. That's kind of interesting. I was like, oh, you're talking about these. So talk about the Anakim. I don't know. I thought that was kind of neat. Like I said, you can take that with a grain of salt, but I thought it was kind of an interesting story coming from nine different guys, you know, all talking about the same thing. Two of them got killed that day doing that, but interesting. So anyway, here goes Caleb, right? By himself. I didn't have guns. I don't know what he was doing. But it says he drove out three sons of Anak from there, Sheshai, Ahiman, this is in verse 14, and Talmai, the children of Anak. It says, then he went up from there to the inhabitants of Debir. Formerly the name of Debir was Kirjath-Sepher. So here's Caleb at 85 years old, right? All the other children of Israel, they're done. They're said, you know, we've kind of settled into the land. We're good now. Caleb's, he's still wanting to go out there and fight giants. There he goes. He's going off. He's fighting giants and he's doing it. He's killing off the giants there. And he drove them out. I don't know how many guys he had with him, but guess what? There he was. But he did it. 85 years old, right? So there's one excuse, right? Once you get to a certain age, it's not a time. I know when I was younger, I used to think, I'm 65, I'm going to retire. You know, what a neat thing that'll be. You know, God let me literally retire really early, and I got bored. I thought, I got to keep on doing something, right? So it wasn't what it was cracked up to be in my mind, right? Just kind of sitting around not doing whatever I wanted. So, you know, went to school and all that stuff. But anyway, here's Caleb. He wasn't about to retire. He says, I'm still strong. I still got my strength. I still got my mind about me. Let's go kill some giants. All right, so that's what he did. Verse 16, it says, and Caleb said, he who attacks, right? Now, Caleb's done his work. He's done, drove out some giants. He's done some amazing things. But now he says in verse 16, and Caleb said, he who attacks Kirjath-Sepher and takes it, to him I will give Achash, my daughter, as a wife. So Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, took it, and he gave him Achash, his daughter, as a wife. Now, what's the point of bringing this up? All right, so here we have this giant slayer. The guy's going out killing giants, you know, driving these giants out. You know, imagine if he's driving them out, right? He's caused some kind of fear in those giants, right? So it's one thing for those giants to fight to death, but now if they're scared of this Caleb guy, hey, there's something about this, right? There's something about this. Now, one thing that's interesting, Caleb has two meanings to the name Caleb. Anybody here named Caleb by chance? No? Okay, so hopefully nobody will start to get offended before I finish my explanation. But Caleb has two different meanings, and it refers to a dog, all right? But in a good way, okay? Don't go wrong. Well, the first part of the meaning of Caleb is basically undying loyalty of a dog, right? Which is an amazing trait, if you will. If you're as loyal as a dog could be, then hey, you're doing pretty good. That's a real good characteristic about you, right? But that's one part of the name of Caleb, means just undying loyalty, and they compare it to a dog, right? But the other thing they compare to a dog in the name of Caleb is something that's very ravenous, very rabid, right? A rabid dog basically will attack something without thinking. How many of y'all have heard those stories that a bear goes to attack a hunter and his little 50-pound Labrador goes to attack the bear? How silly is that? That just don't make sense. You know, you dumb dog. Sometimes you see dogs going chasing cars down the road trying to bite the tires. Doesn't even make any kind of sense, right? But that's the other side of the name Caleb, right? They will just attack things and they're basically ravenous. They'll do things without thinking. Now, hopefully Caleb was thinking, but these two things here, they kind of portray his personality. He was loyal to the children of Israel, loyal to God. But man, guess what? He was going out and attacking giants too, right? Now, when we get to verse 16, so we see Caleb, he's done all these things. We get to verse 16, guess what he starts doing? He starts encouraging others. Hey, why don't somebody else go out and kill some giants too? And there's going to be reward in it. But now he's leading others to kill giants, right? So if you're a giant killer, guess what? Don't keep to yourself. There's a huge blessing in being able to pass these things down. You might not have anybody coming to you, let's say. Let's say you've slain giants in your life. You don't have anybody coming to you to ask for your knowledge. Oh, woe is me. You know, how am I going to pass on my knowledge? There are plenty of places out there. There's like these Big Brother programs out there, you know, where you go and you sit with kids. You can sit with kids like 1 hour a week or however that works exactly. I'm not sure. But there's programs out there where kids that grew up without dads, guess what? Man, they're looking for anybody that will come give them time. You might think, oh, I'm not as cool as them. I've never played basketball. Who cares? You know, if you want to do that, right, God is going to line somebody up for you. I'll tell you now. There are kids out there, so many kids out there that need parents, right? You might not be able to be their actual parents, obviously. But man, I tell you, you can go out and give them some advice, you know, pray for them, pray with them, share the gospel. Maybe they've done some stupid things in life, and they just don't know how to get it right because they've never had a parent to bring them up. You know, teach them how to slay giants, if that makes sense, right? Get together with them, pray with them, you know, the detention centers. You know, they have these programs set up. If they don't have a program set up, guess what? We have a good friend up in Cleveland. His name's Nathan Long. I don't know if you all have heard of him, but what his ministry is, he says he's a missionary. My first thought of missionaries is those that go out to other countries, you know, that's just because of kind of how I grew up. But guess what his calling is? He goes into detention centers and gives classes, talks to people, does church services for teenagers, like ages like 13 up to 18. You know, and he's there. And he has other men from his church that go with him at times, you know. But that's what his calling is. You know, I mean, how neat is that? How needed, I should say, is that? You know, I don't want to say forget the lost souls. That sounds really horrible. But forget about some of these other visions of grandeur, if you will, of what a missionary should be. I mean, we got kids all over the place that need just people to come talk to them, people to care about them. You know, that's the biggest thing. If you can care, if you have the in you the capacity to care about somebody else, you're qualified. That's all that qualifies you. You know, go sit and listen to them. They'll sit to you. They might be rude because that's probably all they know how to do, but they'll listen. Something will stick, right? Something will stick. So the question is, you know, we're talking about slaying giants and being giant killers. Who do you want to be like? Michael Jordan or Caleb? You know, Tiger Woods or David? You know, you see what I'm getting at? The things that we look at, the people we idolize, versus the people that we should maybe hold up and look up to their example, it's all backwards in our society. You know, we have giant killers here. I can tell just by looking, because we got some white hair in here, right? I strive for that. I don't say that in a derogatory term. Hopefully y'all don't take it that way. I look at that and I say, my dad stopped dying his hair. And I'm like proud of my dad. He stopped dying his hair. That's right, Dad. That's where you should. The Bible looks at it as a positive thing. Let's look at it positive, right? But there's people here that have slain giants. You know, look for their advice. Don't feel silly. Don't be too proud, because guess what? Pride comes before the fall. We know that. Be proud, you're going to fall down. Don't be proud, you'll be able to hold yourself up and you know, ask advice. You know, humble yourself. There was a guy, I heard this illustration, it's neat, so I'm sharing. I wasn't going to, but I'm going to share it. There was a guy that was, he was out in the woods, right, all by himself, and he was close to his village, and he was out there trying to dig a well, right, because he was trying to build his own house. He's digging a well, and he got down there digging, and guess what this guy did? He dug his well so deep, and he didn't find any water down there, but he found out he couldn't get out either. His ladder was too short. What am I going to do, right? He started yelling for help. The villagers would come in. They couldn't find a rope long enough, right? So they're trying to figure out all these different ways. He's doing his best to try to climb up the side of that little, it's a pretty big hole now, deep hole that he made, and he can't get out, right? He's trying. The villagers up top, they're saying, don't give up. Right, and they're just trying to encourage him and do all these things. They're throwing down water to him. They're throwing him down food, maybe a blanket, you know, so he can sleep in that hole that night because he still can't get out. And that's all fine and dandy. He's surviving down in that hole, but he's still stuck in the hole. He can't get out. Man, what am I supposed to do? Can't get out of this thing, you know. And he's starting to get really discouraged, right? And he's there, and he says, you know, I'm going to give it one more shot. You know, I'm going to get there. And they've got this rope lowered, you know, and he's trying to climb up the sides of that well there. He's getting there. He almost gets to the rope. But then he slips. The last second, he slips and falls all the way back down that hole. And he's just done. What am I going to do? I can't get out. I've got myself in this hole. I've dug this hole too deep. I wasn't paying attention to my ladder, how long my ladder was. I can't get out. What am I going to do? All right? So he's sitting there. He's about to give up. He's done. Curled up in his little blanket that the villagers threw down to him, and he's done. You know, the encouragements of his friends and neighbors up top, they're starting to die down because they're starting to see that he's given up. You know, what is he going to do? I got nothing left. You know, I'm just going to sit down here and die. As he sits down there just to kind of lay down and just basically surrender himself to everything, all of a sudden he hears a thump next to him. And what in the world? He looks over, somebody's down there in the hole. Somebody jumped down there in the hole with him. And he looks up and says, what in the world are you doing? Jumping down here in the hole with me. What's your problem? Don't you know I can't get out? He says, you're down here with me. I've tried everything. I can't get out. And all of a sudden he sees that guy. He just looks over at him and he picks up the shovel and just starts, you know, putting some tools together. And that guy that's been stuck in the well says, hey, what are you doing? He says, don't worry about it. It's like, I've been down this hole before. I know how to get out. Let's go. So this guy jumped down the hole with him, and I'm going to teach you how to get out of it, right? So basically the whole point of that is, you know, we've slain giants before. We've had huge problems in our life, you know? And God's put them there for a reason. My goodness, there's been problems that I've had in my life that I would almost give my left arm to say, Lord, I hope I never go through that problem again, right? But at the same time, guess what? God puts them there for a reason. It's not for us just to hold on to that experience and be like, well, that's it. That's my experience. I'm not sharing it with anybody. But sure enough, somebody's going to come along one of these days that's going to need that advice. So hold on to it. Hold on to that wisdom that you've gained through those hardships and be thankful for it. Just like James said in the book, James chapter 1, be thankful for those problems. Why? Somebody's going to come along that's going to need that advice at some point in your life, and you're literally probably going to save their life. Right? Hold on to those things. You know, God put you there in their path, to save them, literally, right? So anyway, that's the sermon for today. You know, slaying giants in your life. Hopefully we can take some kind of encouragement from that. Take the hardships that you felt. You might think that you've had the worst hardships that anybody's ever had to deal with in their life, right? But God put them there for a reason, you know, to be a shining, hopefully a shining example to somebody else. We're going to go ahead and sing a hymn of invitation here. That says page 464, sister, is that right? And we're going to have an invitation. If God's put something on your heart, I mean, come forward. I know sometimes we look at invitations and be like, that's kind of silly. What am I going to go forward for? If you've never gone forward before with something heavy on your heart, I don't know. You're missing out on an experience. It's kind of interesting. So anyway, let's go ahead and have our hymn of invitation.